Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Adam Amin of Fox. He was on the call last week for the 49er game and will be again this week with the Jaguars in town. Hey, Adam, what's going on? Joining us here on the River Islands guest line. How are you?
Great to talk to you guys, man. Good to talk to you as always.
Yeah, absolutely. And Adam, as you can hear, is on YouTube as well. So if you want to take a look at all of this and watch as you listen, then feel free to do that as well. We've been talking a lot about Trevor Lawrence today, Adam, and I wonder what your perspective is, taking into account the difficult landing spot with all of the coaching changes, but then again, expectations that could not have been higher. How would you characterize the first handful of years of his career?
I mean, obviously, it's been a mixed bag, right? And you understand some of the elements that have coincided with his time there. You start with Urban Meyer, then you have another coaching change to Peterson. Now you're in another system. You're with a first-time head coach, unlike what you've had in the past, where you had Urban Meyer, who was, you know, obviously a decorated college coach, Doug Peterson, a Super Bowl champion NFL coach. You know, Liam Cohen has had, you know, a couple of years of NFL experience as an offensive coordinator. So to kind of go into a new system for a guy who, by the way, does have a good reputation as a play caller so far, Liam Cohen's got a good reputation around the league, still trying to find their footing a little bit. So having that as kind of the backdrop for this, I understand why there might be some level of inconsistency, but it's been more streaky than anything else, right? Like on the road in particular, like he's gone to different environments. He was terrible to start, had a great stretch of about a year, you know, played decently on the road in a Kansas City environment that's tough in a playoff game. So, you know, there have been, what, 9 straight road losses for him. So I think there's a lot of different elements. A lot of it is him. Some of it is the offensive line that's been in flux over a period of time. They've made trades. They've tried to draft. You know, that's an offensive line that's had some issues. And then I think, yeah, play calling, offensive line, and some of Trevor Lawrence's own issues with ball security, with slightly off-target throws. Those things you can all consider to be factors in what has led to what I think is a mixed bag in the NFL so far. The goods are, you know, the good moments have been really fun, been really good to watch. I think the rough moments are understandable, and he's responsible for a good chunk of that too.
And what have been your prevailing takeaways from the 3 games this year? You mentioned mixed bag and the ball control issues and a lot of drops from his receivers. When you look at the first 3 from Jacksonville, what's your takeaway?
Again, it's not always pretty. You know, they've needed good special teams to stay in some of these games. These are close games. Obviously the Houston game was close. Cincinnati was close. I think they have very little in terms of receiver production that's been consistent, right? Just not very inconsistent at the receiver position. So Brian Thomas obviously has this breakout rookie year. How many drops of these, you know, 13 or 14, depending on where you look at drops, has he been responsible for? Some places say 4, some say 6. You know, in big moments as well, you know, those have come up. Obviously, he made up for it at the end of their last game against Houston with the big catch, you know, the 46-yard catch after he had some drops. But Brenton Strange is being thrust into a new role now as, like, your second receiver. You know, he doesn't have the pedigree that a guy like Evan Ingram had before. Travis Etienne has had some drops out of the backfield, and he is still trying to find it in the running game. I think both offenses are kind of not mirror images of each other, but understandable where, you know, understandable why the points just haven't been racked up on either side just yet. I think there have been a combination of some drops, some offensive line issues. Obviously, Max played 2 games where Brock Purdy has not. So I think both of these teams are coming in still trying to find their offensive identities. I would imagine both want to get – I imagine Kyle Shanahan and Liam Cohen are both going to say in the next couple of days to our crews, like, yeah, we need to get the running game going.
Yeah, for sure. Adam Amin of Fox is with us. He's calling the game Niners and Jags on Sunday. Willard and Dibs, 95.7 the game. I'm going to jump to a conclusion on at least one of these. But, Adam, you were here last weekend. Mac Jones was the quarterback and Nick Bosa was the edge rusher. This weekend, it's probably Brock Purdy's the quarterback, and we don't know yet who's necessarily going to be the edge rusher. So how different is this 49er team that you'll talk about this weekend?
So, you know, going back today and kind of, you know, trying to find some times where Nick's missed games. Bosa hasn't missed a lot of games, right, since he's come back from that ACL injury. I think he's missed like four games the last four full seasons,
yeah,
or maybe
small,
three plus full seasons.
Small handful, yeah.
Very, very small. I think they're 1-3 in those games when Bosa doesn't play. So I was trying to see, well, what do the numbers look like? The sacks are not the issue. I think it's very easy, and understandably so, by the way, with Nick's track record, I think it's very easy to just say, well, the sack production must be down. The sack rate is about the same in that small sample size of four games relative to, you know, the 50 plus or whatever it is that he has played, right, in that stretch. Or 40 plus he's played in that stretch. So it's not the sack issues. It's the number that stuck out to me most was how much teams run against the Niners when Bosa is out. 60% of the plays that are run against San Francisco's defense in those four games that Bosa missed were run plays. The rest of the time when Bosa's in there, it's about 32-33%. 38-39% pass plays, so close to 40%, which is lower than the average. And looking at some of the play-by-play of that, you get the sense that first and second down are where Nick Bosa really makes more hay than we maybe give him credit for, right? We think of him as the third down pass rush specialist, right? We think of him as the guy who's going to get you double-digit sacks or at least give you a good chance to get to 10-plus sacks every year, right? It's not the sack issues. It's what San Francisco seemingly does on first and second down. And the reason that run percentage is so much higher in those games without Bosa is because teams are doing better on first and second down, allowing them to run a lot more short yardage run plays, third down and two, third down and three, and not have to deal with anybody else that's filling in on the pass rush, not have to deal with maybe Fred Warner coming in, or I know for a lot of years it was Dre Greenlaw, whoever you want to bring from the safety spot. There's just less of that in those games that Bosa doesn't play. So I think that's where the impact is usually felt. And I do feel like what Travis Etienne does for Jacksonville and what the offensive line for the Jaguars does on Sunday is going to have a lot to do with how much success they have. Because first and second down run success usually leads to longer sustained drives. You keep San Francisco's offense off the field. And I think that's how that domino effect plays out when Bosa's out.
Yeah, and also it keeps the Niners from being able to pin their ears back and maybe bring extra rushers to try to put Lawrence under pressure. And even with Bosa, Adam, it's been 303 straight pass attempts against the Niners without an interception. So when you look at the secondary last week, like, what are you seeing from this Niners defense?
Man, I mean, listen, D'Amador Lenore is still been an up-and-down player at times in pass coverage, I think, in his NFL career, trying to figure out what Green is doing on the other side still. You know, I've been impressed with Stout, you know, but it more so in late coverage and in the run game, like the versatility that he brings. There's a lot of turnover. I feel like injuries have been obviously a big theme since Kyle has been head coach in San Francisco, right? And I would say what position has had more turnover than the defensive back position for San Francisco when it comes to all the injuries, when it comes to guys, you know, all the you know, Verrett injuries that he had a corner, you know, I mean, you could make points in Kyle's career on that side of the ball. So I understand that with some of that turnover, with the lack of continuity, and then maybe just not getting the opportunities, I think that can happen. But 9-10 games now is a pretty long time to go without getting any type of interception. And I will be curious if some of the issues that we've talked about with Trevor Lawrence pop up, right? It's that you have to get tips and overthrows. Trevor's had a tendency to throw slightly off target, maybe throw a couple of balls that end up getting tipped up into the air. And lead to interceptions. We've seen that a decent amount in his career. I think those are the types of plays that you have to be ready for if you're going to turn this team over. And like I said, I understand all the domino effect. All right, you made a great point just now where when it's third down and two, it's harder to bring a pass rush because you're expecting run. I think if you get him into some of those situations, like you said, get Lawrence on his back. Let's see what Mykel Williams does. Let's see what Bryce Huff does with maybe some more extended snaps, or Gross Matos with a few more snaps this week. Maybe Robert Beal ends up playing a role like he did late, you know, a couple of years ago in the season when he was a rookie. Maybe he gets to have an opportunity on some of these third down plays.
Adam Amin of Fox, he'll be on the call. He was last week for the Niner game. He will be again this week on Fox, Niners and Jaguars, of course, this weekend at Levi Stadium. Adam, hey, when are your production meetings with the head coaches? Does that happen on Friday or Saturday?
Usually Friday for the home team, okay, and then Saturday for the road team.
So would you take us back to last Friday and share what you can about what Kyle Shanahan said about how close Brock Purdy might have been, and also what his thoughts on his confidence in Mac Jones was at that time?
You know, it didn't feel like a far-fetched thing that Brock could play. I think they were being cautious. He basically said, like, he can be the emergency third backup, but that's going to be a Saturday decision, as usually the roster moves are. He ended up, you know, not being activated as the emergency third backup. I think that did have something to do with the confidence, some confidence in Mac Jones, right? He did well against a zone defense in New Orleans. Like, New Orleans is a really heavy zone defense. Arizona is a very heavy zone defense. Typically, they play a lot of zone. So I think having some comfort going up against teams like that, you know, Mac in his career, and this includes when he was in Jacksonville last season and started, you know, basically half the year when Lawrence was out, he had to deal with, like, Brian Flores' defenses, right? He saw that in Miami when Brian was the head coach. He saw that when Brian was the DC in Minnesota last year, and that was one of the games that Mac started. We happened to do that game, so that was kind of fresh in my mind. And he's played a lot of different types of looks. So I don't think disguise, like, completely freaks Mac Jones out. I think he's moved well in the pocket. I think he wasn't as decisive as he wanted to be, and he would against New Orleans, and I bet he would tell you that there were a couple of moments where he could have pulled the trigger, but we also saw that moment, you know, that great throw to Pearsall on fourth down and two. There was no hesitation on that throw. He saw it, threw the route, and I think those things kind of are the things that coaches see that maybe we don't always see in practice, or we don't have a full grasp of just in a, you know, 15, 20-minute production meeting with a head coach until we get a chance to see it play out. So I think his confidence level is fairly high in Mac Jones for what they needed, you know, in that game. I think it's a different test this week. You know, this Jacksonville defense has been playing great, and obviously it's probably a luxury to have Brock in the game and be back out onto the field. And in my head, I was kind of like, I think I'll see him next week. You know, we'll figure it all out as we get to the end of the weekend. But to me, it just kind of felt like I'm going to probably see this guy next week if he doesn't have any setbacks during the week.
Can you elaborate a little on this defense? Because they lead the NFL with 7 interceptions taken away, yet they don't blitz a lot. They don't pressure the QB a lot. When you look at the Jacksonville D, how are they doing it, Adam?
Listen, I remember going back last year and just thinking, wow, Josh Hines-Allen and Trayvon Walker have a lot of talent, and those are really two really good edge rushers for them. And I didn't see enough execution last year. And again, the limited times that we watched Jacksonville, I had one of their games and I watched a couple, one in Chicago where they didn't look particularly good, but their defense looked great at times last year. But they didn't generate takeaways. They didn't get to the quarterback the way that, you know, you would expect two talented guys to do. I think they beef up their front. You know, Armstead's got another year, you know, in Jacksonville. I'm sure he's a little bit more comfortable, but this is a different type of defense. Campanelli is their, Anthony Campanelli is their defensive coordinator. And I think coming from Minnesota, coming from that Flores style defense as well, I think he's kind of taken a couple of things like, let me see what I can disguise. Let me see where I can bring a fourth or fifth rusher from. Let me see if I can drop some of these guys. You know, Trayvon Walker dropped back in coverage at a pick last year. Like, he's had a couple of decent plays. Josh Hines-Allen has had a couple of picks in his career. I like their defensive backfield. I like the rotation of their backers. Like, Devin Lloyd's a solid linebacker in my estimation. Ventrell Miller gives them some depth. You know, there's good players, I think, on this Jacksonville defense. And then just being able to execute with four or five – and be able to add an extra body back in coverage or to bring them late on pressure. I think that Flores kind of style from Minnesota that Campanelli has helped bring over, I think that has a lot of influence on how this defense has been able to generate takeaways. And again, turnovers in the NFL are so randomized sometimes. That's why we always talk about how it's hard to lead the league in turnovers multiple years in a row. Like what Dallas did a few years ago when they had Jordan Lewis, who, by the way, is now a key member of this Jacksonville secondary. You know, they had like 50-plus turnovers to or takeaways.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Over a 2-year period, and they led the league 2 straight years. That's really hard to do. So I think a lot of it is randomized. It is the tips. It is the overthrows. I think they're getting to those balls at a much, much, much higher rate than maybe we saw the last couple of years.
Adam Amin at Fox will be on the call. Niners Jags this weekend. We just got this on our Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line, Adam. Someone texted in and said, we used to listen to Adam talk about burritos and tacos on late-night college football games. Please encourage him to continue his food discussion. So my next question, Adam, is your thoughts on burritos and tacos, and which one is better?
Oh, man. I mean, it's a tortilla with cheese, meat, and vegetables. I don't think you can go wrong. I do love a good burrito. I do love a good taco. It's hard for me to pick between the two when it's, when I feel like there's high-quality ingredients across the board. I will say this. I do appreciate somebody shouting that out. That was a very fun time to, when we're doing the old Pac-12 after dark schedule on a Friday night at Cal, or we're, doing a Stanford USC game or something like that on a Saturday night. I do miss those days. By the way, we are, I know you know our friend Roxy Bernstein very well. Shout out to Roxy.
Yep.
He's joining us for dinner tomorrow night at one of his favorite and my favorite places in Palo Alto, because that's where they have us staying. A shout out to Chef Chews. We're really looking forward to being out there tomorrow night for a nice dinner.
You go ahead and hit him with a boop. Roxy knows everyone. Hey, did you get to stay from the game, or did you have to fly back home and then fly all the way back out here?
No. I had to fly back home, and it's hard to find days at home as we get to this point of the year. I'm getting ready for MLB playoffs next week. We're doing one of the division series in the American League, so that's coming up. Right after that, we've got NBA season starting up. So, that's only, 2.5 weeks away.
Busy man. I love it.
Adam, will you send us a poke?
I got a chance. I caught the 6:30 back home to Chicago last night.
Nice. Okay. I'm sure there's a hockey game in there, too, that you're going to
jam in there, right?
Yeah, you might as well,
Will you will you do us a favor and send us a postcard from the MLB playoffs? Because we here in San Francisco don't know much about it.
What a weird stretch. What a weird month of September, right? And I've been paying more attention to the American League this last week because that's what we're getting ready for. But I had a couple of NL games in the last few weeks, too. And between Cincinnati and Arizona's run, this is so frustrating, I'm sure, to watch for San Francisco fans. Detroit blew a huge lead in the AL Central.
Wow.
The Astros had a lead in the AL West, and Seattle just clinched the division the other night. So Yankees, Blue Jays haven't figured anything out just yet. So it's been a very odd last month of this Major League Baseball season.
No doubt about it. Hey, man, you're awesome for coming on. Say hi to Roxy. Enjoy another weekend in the Bay Area, and have a great call on Sunday.
Appreciate you guys, man. Thanks so much.
Okay. Adam Amin, a five.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.